This is the Geek Dads, the podcast of GeekDad.com on the Wired Blog Network. This is episode 38, The Water's Gotten in the DSL Line. Everybody, you found it. This is Ken Denmead, editor of GeekDad.com, and this is the Geek Dads, episode 38. We got a smaller crew today, but we might have some latecomers show up. We'll see. Starting on my virtual right this evening, we have from the opposite side of the country, Mr. Matt Blum. How are things in beautiful Virginia tonight?
Well, I don't know about beautiful Virginia, but where I live, it's pretty good.
Wow.
Nah,
I'm hometown.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I actually like where I like the part of Virginia.
You kid because you lie.
I couldn't resist the joke. Yeah, okay. Just, yeah. All right. But no, things are going okay. Apart from the fact I'm having surgery next week, but
yeah, we will. You know, if you were a real geek dad, you'd live stream the video.
Well, as I think I mentioned on Twitter, at least, yeah, I tweet it, but the sleep Twitter technology just isn't there yet.
Should have been local anesthetic.
Not for this operation.
Not for that. No.
No. Local would be bad.
They're going spelunking, man. That's not good.
I do not want to be awake for this. There's no way I wish to be awake now.
What's going to be your recovery time?
I'm going to probably have about a week in the hospital, and then probably it's going to be another 4 weeks at home before I'm really doing anything much.
My God.
You know it's serious when they actually want to keep you in the hospital for that long after
for a week, yeah.
I mean, nowadays, birthing babies,
36 hours.
Organ transplants, you're out the door 24, 36 hours. So whatever you're doing, man. The spine transplant, it's a serious surgery. We understand.
Yeah, I'm having several of my vertebrae sort of fused together.
Sending chills up of a lot of people's spines right now. So, but good. It's going to make things much better, right?
I certainly hope so. Good. I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't think it would.
Right. Wonderful. Well. Well, so you'll be home in a week, and we'll expect your first posts in
8 days.
8 days, yeah. Yeah. 7.5 if, one side of your body is working. And yeah.
Oh, I want to get back to, believe me, I want to get back to posting. I'm probably going to be, bored most of the time, So, finding something to post about and posting would give me something to do.
You can sit up in a chair and type. I'm going on vacation. All right. Well, cool. Well, we will, tweet right up until, tweet while they're putting you get in your gown and tweet until you're on the table and tweet when they say they're telling me to count backwards and then tweet 5, 4, 3 and then and we'll know. Yeah.
Just no twit pics of you in your hospital gown.
No,
God, no. Don't worry.
It's family blog. Family blog. Okay,
that's right.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll be looking forward to updates. Russ.
Hey,
how are you this week, sir?
I'm doing well. In the throes of just being back from vacation about, let's see, if I'm doing my math right, about 40 hours ago. So not quite 2 days. And
Have you been back to work yet?
I have. We arrived home Monday morning at 4:30 in the morning. Uh-huh. We left Florida, Port Canaveral, Florida, at 9:30 in the morning. On Sunday, we drove straight, and I basically drove from where? Southern Indiana, all the way through Indiana, through Chicago, into Wisconsin, and we got home about 4:30 in the morning. I slept for an hour, hour and a half, had to get my my oldest daughter up for school, and started working from home about 8 o'clock that morning and was actually in the office today. So, yeah, I'm still somewhat recovering, but it was a really good vacation.
Still a little punchy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
but you're the only one in your office with a tan.
But, well, it's more of a burn than a tan,
oh,
but yes.
All right. Still.
Because in Wisconsin, unless you pay for the privilege to sit in a little bed with, bright lights shining on you all the time.
Right.
Mine's 100% natural.
There you go. So tell us a little bit about the vacation.
Well, before we do that,
okay.
There was a little bird that told me that tomorrow is like the anniversary of your 29th birthday. And so Matt and I, in keeping with, in replicating what Ken Denmead did, a year or so ago, we're going to sing to you, Ken.
Oh, Lord.
So, Matt, 1, 2, 3. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Ken. Happy birthday to you.
And you know what? Besides being a very kind, thoughtful thing to do, you've just demonstrated the lag in Skype.
Yes.
Yes. Obviously.
It's horrible. They American Idol has nothing on us. So.
A one and a two and a two and a two and a two.
Yeah, that definitely was.
Nothing on us, but there you go. So now there have been 3 people that have sung on the Geek Dad podcast.
And I think the novelty is wearing off.
So anyway, tomorrow, February 18th, happens to be Ken Denmead's birthday.
Yep.
So for those that listen to this on the 18th, please give a quick shout out to him and give him a happy birthday greeting. So
appreciate that. The 11th anniversary of my 29th birthday.
There you go. Mine will be coming up soon enough. So,
the 11th anniversary or the 11th observance.
There you go. There it is.
11th observance. Okay.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
There you go.
All right.
So you were asking about my vacation. We had a great time. What we did was we took the family on a Disney cruise. They have a couple boats. I guess I should say ships that sail out of Port Canaveral. There's one boat ship that the Disney Wonder, which is what we were on. It does both a 3-day and a 4-day cruise. We chose to do the 3-day cruise. It started last Tuesday afternoon about 4 o'clock. We piled the family into the van and drove 22 hours. We got to Florida about 2 in the afternoon Wednesday. Had a hotel, got on the ship the next day, went to Nassau, spent a day in Nassau, and then Disney with their deep pockets purchased an island in the Bahamas, so they have their own private island. And so the second day is going to their private island where you can snorkel and look at fish on a reef that they've been building up. You can swim with stingrays, you can parasail, you can go on catamarans, you go on jet skis, you can just poke around in the water, and then you come back to Port Canaveral. And so that's what we did with our family. The kids had a day off of school, so we did actually, Bad Dad. If we were doing Bad Dad Month, I guess I would sign myself up for it. We took our kids out of school for a couple days, which is something that my parents would never do when I was in school. But we took them out of school for a couple days, and we just had a fantastic time. And then Sunday, you arrive back in Port Canaveral really early Sunday morning. We had breakfast on the ship, got in our van, and drove 22 hours to come home. It was kind of fun. I was in many ways gadget-free, but not quite. Left my laptop at home, left my cell phone at home. But in our van of 6 people, we had 7 MP3 players.
So one is a backup in case anybody's ran down.
Well, what it was my wife had 2 books that she e-books that she or audiobooks I should say that she was listening to, but we don't have a charger for a car charger for either of her MP3 players, and one MP3 player wouldn't last for both books. So she put one book on one MP3 player, put the other book on an iPod. I had my iPod. Each of the kids had their iPods. And so we had 7 MP3 players between the 6 of us. We had 3 Nintendo DS, 1 Nintendo Game Boy Advance.
Right.
And we had, I think, 21 or 22 DVDs for the in-van DVD player. So that was, you know, that's how a geek family goes on vacation when you're driving 22 hours.
That is pretty awesome. And I have to applaud you, too. That's longer than I've done about 14, 15 hours in a straight through before. We did Bay Area to middle of Washington. But
okay.
Holy cow, 21 hours.
It's not so bad, particularly when you leave, you know, 4 in the afternoon. The kids are, you know, you throw in a couple DVDs and you get through Chicago, you get down to Indianapolis, and then by about 10 o'clock at night, it's like, okay, we're shutting off the DVD player, go to sleep. And the mom and I just trade off every 4 or 5 hours as we need to fill up the tank for gas. And before you know it, we're in Florida. So coming home was much more difficult because we left at 9 in the morning. So the kids were awake from 9 in the morning till 9 at night.
Mm.
And then we, got home about 4:30 in the morning. So that was, you know, that's the return trip from something like that is much more stressful. The only other thing, you know, we took a couple digital cameras with us. My oldest brought her camera. I brought the family digital camera, threw it in the pocket of my swimsuit, and promptly jumped into the pool.
Oh.
I said a less than family-friendly word when I realized that it was in my pocket. And it's presently sitting in a bag of uncooked rice, and I'm hopefully coaxing it back to life. But the memory card is fine. I've already got the pictures off of it, and the battery appears fine, but I'm not sure the camera's going to survive. So.
Well, if you keep the battery out of it and just let it sit for a few weeks.
I've heard clay cat litter is really good for that, too.
Okay. But so I've got it in just a bag of uncooked rice, and it's already drawn some of the moisture out. You know, you could see water sloshing around on the LCD screen. I don't see the water sloshing around anymore. So
That's a good sign. Right.
That's a good sign. But so we'll see if it takes pictures.
If that doesn't do it, try
microwave.
Try
no.
try clay cat litter.
Okay.
I heard because that, given what that, because that's what that's really.
Or clay Aiken.
Oh. Can I stuff him in a plastic bag? That might be.
I think the police would take a dim view of that.
Yeah. The authorities would not appreciate that. Maybe some of the people who don't care for him, but yeah. So anyway, that's been my last week. So, you know, I'm still catching up
with some
stuff on Geek Dad. Yeah, it was a great time. And, you know, while you're on the ship, they run kinds of specials and sending you to sign up for your next cruise before you actually leave the one you're on. And so, you know, if everything goes well, I'm taking the Geek Mom, just the Geek Mom, on another Disney cruise later this fall.
Oh, good. That would be excellent. Very, very good. I just wanted to ask one more question. So the island, you know, were there any like Westworld cyborgs going on, or what's the island like since they have complete control? Is it, you know, is Mickey in sort of fascist, Banana Republic, military junta outfit?
Well, it's, you have to give props to Disney because when they do something, they do it well. Their island is totally, you know, Bahama themed, mm-hmm. Kind of the beach bum.
Do they have the tiki room?
They don't have the tiki room, but what they've got is, you know, just a bunch of really weathered buildings that make it look like they've been sitting there for years. They've got a post office so you can mail postcards and have it postmarked Castaway Key, I should say. They have the Flying Dutchman from the Pirates in the Caribbean movie moored out by the cruise ship. And so you can get your picture taken with Captain Jack in front of the Flying Dutchman. You can get your picture taken with Mickey and Goofy and Minnie and those guys. And it's all very nautical-themed and beach-themed and things like that. So, you know, it really is pretty neat. You know, it is totally their island. There's an abandoned runway, and they've brought in an old airplane and made it look like it's been sitting there for years and years and years. You can bike around the island. You can walk around the island. You can swim with the stingrays. You can just do all kinds of stuff out there. So it really is. You know, if I had my choice, if I could design my own Disney cruise, very honestly, I wouldn't bother going to Nassau. I would spend 2 days at the Disney private island.
That would be neat. I wonder if you can just do that separate from doing a cruise.
Well, no, unfortunately they don't. You get off the ship in the morning and you got to be back on the ship by the evening. But they're on their 4 day cruises for a while. They used to do, you would go to Nassau, you would go to Castaway Key, and then you'd have a day at sea. Well, they changed it, I guess, a year ago, where you would go to Castaway Key, their private island. You'd go to Nassau on the second day. The third day, you go back to Castaway Key. And then the fourth day, you'd be back in Port Canaveral. So
that's a weird way of doing it.
It is, but you know what? When we were in Nassau, this was actually our third Disney cruise, and we've spent progressively less time in Nassau every time we go, and we just spend more time on the ship, doing the onboard activities and the onboard entertainment, and swimming in the pool and doing those kind of things. And so, whereas when we're at Castaway Key, you can go snorkeling, you can do all kinds of stuff, and we're hardly on the ship at all that day that we're on their private island. So it is a really a neat place. It's, you know, again, it's Disney, so it's family friendly. They've got great spots. If you're there just adults, they've got an adults-only beach, so you got to be 18 years or older to go to that beach. But if you've got families, they've got there's a family beach. They've got a teen beach if you just want the teens to go and do something by themselves. They're running activities for the kids at all times, so it's just, you know, again, Disney does.
They've laid it out. They've set it up well.
They have. They really have. So, highly recommend a Disney cruise. You know, I took my wife on we took the family a couple of years ago, and then about a year and 3 months ago, I took my wife on a cruise, and rather than risk going with something that we didn't know, knowing that this was going to be one of the few times that we, just the two of us, would be able to get away,
right,
we chose the Disney cruise, and we sat at a dinner table with three other couples who had left their kids at home or didn't have children and are on Disney cruise. So they really do know their stuff. Now it does tend to run a little bit more pricey than some of the other cruise lines that would run to Nassau and things like that. But again, we don't want a college party barge, you know, as a family, we don't want that kind of thing.
Right.
You'd never have to worry about the programs that are on the TV in the staterooms. You never have to worry about the movies that are being shown in the theater on the ship. It's just all totally family friendly, and so that's why we've chosen it.
Yeah, and there's two ways to look at it. First of all, it's going to be expensive. You know, it's going to be expensive, but the experience is when it's something Disney, as commercial as that's going to be, it's also there is also going to be a high level of professionalism and quality to it. And
yes,
I mean, we, as I posted a lot about, right before Christmas, we went and spent the 4 or 5 days down at Disneyland, and we stayed at the Grand Californian, which is the priciest, you know, the fancy place there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was amazing.
Yeah,
it was amazing. Yeah. And they think about everything. They take care of everything. And so if you can afford it, if you can save up a little bit, it's going to make your experience 10 times better.
Yeah, we found that, you know, even on the Disney cruise, when you factor in that you're getting room and board, all your meals, and pretty much all your entertainment.
Yeah.
you're spending, depending on, you know, the category of stateroom that you choose on the ship, you're not even spending $100 a day per person.
That's pretty amazing.
For your room and board, all your meals, and all your entertainment, nearly all of your entertainment. So, which is really, when you break it down, not that bad. You just got to get from wherever you are to Port Canaveral, Florida, to take the cruise. And that's why we drove, because we just couldn't possibly fly six people to Florida and back. So, but anyway, enough about my vacation.
That's really, really cool. All right, well, so we have one subject that we wanted to bring up tonight. It's sort of a discussion topic, something that was in the news just in the last couple of days. We posted about it on Geek Dad. We thought it was a something bigger to talk about than just as a you know, somebody's post of the week. And that is the announcement out of the New York Toy Fair this week that what seems on one hand to be something maybe we've been waiting for a long time, and seems like, you know, a no-brainer. Why hadn't they done this, you know, a decade ago or more? And, you know, maybe there's history. Maybe there has been, you know, flirtations between them before. On the other hand, can send a little bit of a chill down our spines in terms of what it means from a commercial level of, I don't know, of I don't know, from commerce, from how much, you know, we're gonna spend on this stuff. And that is the fact that Lego and Disney announced a partnership this week, and so that it's basically a sort of high level licensing deal. Lego will be coming out next year with new kits. So far, what's been announced have been kits based on Cars, on Toy Story, and on the upcoming Prince of Persia movie,
which I think is really cool.
To be specific, the Cars one is not actually Legos; they're Duplos.
Yeah, was it just Duplos? Because I thought they both read that they were doing both types of kits. But
I'm pretty sure just Cars is just Duplos.
Okay.
I think that's what I saw.
All right. So initial reaction is I'm totally torn. And you guys, you know, pipe in whenever, but it's like, okay, wow, cool. And, you know, the what we've seen in the last few years with Lego Star Wars and Lego Indiana Jones, they are exploring these sort of new partnerships and connecting with other properties that sort of works in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I know my kids have enjoyed the Lego Indiana Jones sets they've gotten. They've always loved the Lego, the Star Wars kits that they've gotten. I mean, it they really work, and they're ton of fun to build, ton of fun to play with. And with Disney, it seems like this is something that should have happened a long, long time ago. I don't know, though, but, you know, it's rank commercialism, but
sure,
it's Lego, yeah. So it's cool.
It's Lego and it's Disney, well, so yes.
But, I mean, Star Wars is rank commercialism, too.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. Indiana Jones is rank commercialism.
It's true.
Yeah. It's, you know, and the Batman was when they still had the license for it.
Right. Yep.
But it's nothing new. I mean, I think the only reason they haven't done it before is because Disney tends to hold that kind of thing pretty close to the vest. I mean, they like to do that sort of thing themselves.
Yeah.
I don't think they don't like to have other people do that for them.
Well, you know? But what level of toys do we see get made for Happy Meals?
Well, that's, again, that's, you know, that's part of the marketing strategy for, you know, it benefits both McDonald's as well as Disney. So
sure.
a Disney Lego team up is going to certainly benefit both companies. You know, I know that one of my boys sent a note to Lego that, you know, you can go to their website and you can send a note to them. And so he was thrilled. He typed out a note to them saying, I really want to see Disney Pirates in the Caribbean as a Lego game from you guys.
Right.
And within a couple hours, he got a response back from Lego. Now it was, you know, relatively generic. Thanks for sending us your idea. We're going to take a look at it. You know, that kind of thing, but it just made his day. And so it's those little kind of things. Both Disney and Lego are incredibly good at being masters of the details. And I see this as a good thing. It's certainly going to benefit both companies. Is it rank consumerism? Absolutely. No question.
But it's no different. You know, yeah. But that's no different than anything else that they do.
Right, exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
They're in it to make a buck. I mean, but that's nothing, you know, they always have been. But they can be entered, but as long as they're entertaining at the same time they're making a buck, I see nothing wrong with it.
Exactly.
I guess so. I mean, I'll absolutely, you know, going to want to pick up a few of those sets. And I mean, cars will be cool. You know, we know what we'll see there. You know, we'll have little car versions of each of the cars and probably some sort of a serviced, you know, probably a larger set that's the whole sort of crossroads in the town, some stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Toy Story, what, you know, that's really interesting because, so are we going to have Lego representations of toys from Toy Stories that are based on other licensed concepts, like Mr. Potato, a Lego Mr. Potato yep. Head?
Probably not. I'm thinking they probably can't do that because their licensing agreement for the movie, you know, to put Mr. Potato Head in the movie,
right?
Does what with Mattel? I think it is who makes.
Okay,
Mr. has their own Mattel too. Yeah,
yeah. Wouldn't cover that. They'd have to have a separate licensing agreement with Lego. I think it would have to be with the characters, just the characters that are unique to Toy Story, like Woody and Buzz,
yeah,
and any and the other unique ones,
Stinky Pete,
yeah, and what's her name? The cowgirl.
What's her name?
And the
Bullseye the horse.
Yep.
Break like the yeah, wind, Bullseye. I mean, run like the wind,
Bullseye. That's right. That's it, Bullseye.
Right. But God. So
I've only watched it how many freaking times, and I can't remember the names of the characters.
Run, Forrest, run. No, wrong with me.
Because I can't imagine how else they could do it. I mean, if you look at the Disney store, at the stuff that they sell there from Toy Story, exactly. They only have the characters that are
yes
specific to you know, to the movie. That are not, you know, not licensed characters from other places. So I have to think that's the way it's going to be for this too.
It'll be interesting to see. Now what I've thought has been interesting, especially in a lot of the comments that have come through on that post, are, you know, more people going, yeah, but what about, I mean, obviously this is probably, they're just starting out. They're exploring each other and see how well it can get pulled off, but there's a lot of Disney properties.
Oh yeah. I mean, just think, you know, if they do like Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin, I mean, look at how much they could do with those. I mean,
oh yeah.
Like a set with the Beast's castle. And, I mean, how much amazing stuff could you put in there? I mean, or, you know, all the various characters in, Aladdin.
Well, a lot of people were going, what about WALL-E?
Yeah.
That's true.
That seems like, I mean, there'd be a whole other sort of space milieu that you could work in that would have a ton of applications. And then you go back into the classic stuff. I don't know. Of course, my joke on the post was, we want to see the 3,000-piece kit of the USS Cygnus from Black Hole.
There you go. That would be cool.
Would that not be awesome? That would be something.
Yes, but that would only appeal to hardcore geeks, unfortunately.
40-something geeks.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're trying to stick to things that people will not, you know, that right. Everybody will recognize. I mean, right? Everybody recognizes Star Wars and Indiana Jones and Batman, like when they had it, and, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I doubt they're going to go for anything quite that esoteric. If you want that, you're going to have to do it yourself, I'm afraid, Ken.
Oh, darn it. Well, once again, in my copious free time.
There you go. Exactly. You got plenty of it.
Since we had the I'll talk about it later, but the US, the Yamamoto, Starship Yamamoto the other day in Lego, so.
Hmm.
Maybe you haven't read that one, Russ. Since you
I haven't read that one, okay. I'll admit I'm
I'll
not.
I'm going to bring that one up in my post of the week. But
all right.
So, just quickly, anyone, you know, what would out of all the Disney stuff, what would be your coolest Lego set based on a Disney property?
I would go with Matt's suggestion of like the Beast Castle. They could really do something. You know, they could build entire worlds around many of the movies, but I think the Beast Castle would be really good. I think from a Lego game for the Wii or the PlayStation, I could see Pirates in the Caribbean being one of those things. You know, Disney Interactive tried a Pirates in the Caribbean video game when At World's End came out.
Mm-hmm.
Not a real good video game. Certainly not their best. But I could really see something like that taking off in the genre of Lego Indiana Jones, Lego Batman,
yeah.
You know, Lego Star Wars.
What about you, Matt?
I had already mentioned those.
That's why he spoke more quickly.
Yeah, there you go. See,
we've discussed this already, Matt.
Yeah, those would be cool. I mean, if they want to go back further, I think it'd be awesome to have like a Robin Hood one. I always loved the Disney Jungle Robin Hood. Yeah, Jungle Book would be cool. Peter Pan. Peter Pan was such a great,
mm-hmm.
great adaptation.
Okay, I got one for you.
Cinderella.
Thinking outside the animation box. Tron.
Oh. You know.
Disney property, especially, and they're talking about this new,
2.0.
Well, the sequel's coming out. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
But
Lego Tron would be awesome, but that.
But again, very geek centered.
Well, but we rule now.
That's right, and you know Tron's already been done in video game. I mean, it was done. Was it done for the Atari? I know it was done for the Intellivision back in the day when I had an Intellivision. I had a Tron game.
Well, but the arcade game was the
was the arcade best. Game was
it
was out.
The best thing ever. I mean, you
know. Yeah.
Basically, yes, it was.
Well, see, I was too cheap to plug quarters into a machine I was no good at, so I just was able to convince my parents to get me the Tron game for the Intellivision.
Cool. All right. I was going to see if anyone in the chat room was going to could bring one up, but
they're kind of quiet there tonight.
They are. Dan came in. Dan Donahoe. Yep. Dan Donahoe came in. Made it back. Dan, hopefully, Dan is our Geek Dad correspondent in Australia, and hopefully he will be able to join us next Geek Dad's podcast in 2 weeks. He was going to try and make it tonight, but he had a business arrangement because as really a really good geek should, Dan actually lives in our future.
That's right.
it's actually Wednesday afternoon.
About what, 2:45, something like that.
Yeah. Where he's at in Western Australia. So so he is literally a man in the future. But and has been, you know, and he could tell us stories about the wildfires that are going on there too. So I want to get some updates on that because I think it's died down a little bit and they're not you know, it's fallen off of the international news radar. But
Yeah.
We'd love to hear a little follow-up. There was some word about arsonists getting arrested, and that's
I heard about that.
Pretty serious stuff out there.
Mm.
Well,
I saw some pictures. It's just amazing. Boston.com had this spread of like 13 pictures. It's just incredible. Absolutely.
Testing something in the chat room right now. We'll see who gets to see it. Anyone looking at the chat room right now?
Yeah.
I
mean, in the video stream.
Oh no.
Video stream. No, not
yet.
I hold
see,
on.
Oh, I see a little YouTube
screen
thing.
And screen YouTube.
Yep. Oh, burn notice.
Burn notice. Sorry.
Love
my Bruce Campbell feature there.
There you go.
That's it. I'm starting to, you know, YouTube's picking it up now. I ran a poll earlier. Now you can actually feed Ustream video, picture in picture, into the Ustream.
Wow.
That's pretty awesome. So had to show off my Bruce Campbell. Had I mentioned the probably in the last podcast, it was right after I had done the Bruce Campbell story. And a few days later, a friend of mine emails me and goes, "You got to go to the Bruce Campbell website right now, right now." Yeah, go over there. And they'd actually published my story. My name is on Bruce Campbell's website. I'm like, dude, geek dance. All right.
So there is that on YouTube anywhere?
No, the geek dance. No,
the geek. Ken, Geek Dad Ken doing the geek dance.
Yeah. What would the geek dance be? I don't know. That would be bad.
No.
All right. Let's move forward, gentlemen. Let us talk about a project. We were trying to get into talking at least briefly about a project every podcast, because one of the things that people tend to come to us and read us about or enjoy reading Geek Dad for are some of the projects that we'll post. And admittedly, you know, we've got 16, 17 writers. It's slowed down a little bit. You know, how much time do we have? Most of us, you know, full-time job working dads. You know, we can do a couple of cool projects a year, but I think we kind of run out after a while. So we've been a little quiet on the project front lately. But so we want to talk about some of the ones that we've done previously and maybe some of the ones we're planning here on the podcast. And so, Russ, you wanted to do a little flashback to a project post you did.
Yeah, I back in September, I think it was last year, when we had Pirate Week leading up to International Talk Like a Pirate Day. One of the things that I had done was written a how-to wiki article for Wired. So if you go to how-to.wired.com and search Treasure Map, this is a project that we had a rainy Saturday here at the house, and it was right before our Pirate Week. And so something that I had done years ago when I was, 8-10 years old, was take just a brown paper bag, draw a pirate's map on it, cut out one of the panels of the brown paper bag, draw a pirate's map on it, and then what you do is you crumple up the paper bag and you rub it together and you crumple it and you flatten it out and you crumple it a different way and you flatten it out and you twist it up and you flatten it out. And really what it does is it makes just an ordinary brown paper grocery bag can take on the appearance of, an old parchment. And so you can do all kinds of things with this. And really what we liked about it was we had all the materials in the house. We didn't have to go buy anything for this project, because I'm guessing that, any family that happens to listen to this podcast, my guess is they've got brown paper grocery bags in their house somewhere. My guess is that they've got markers or crayons in their house somewhere. My guess is that they've got a pair of scissors in their house somewhere. And my guess is that, with adult supervision, a candle somewhere in their house. And what we did was we just took a Saturday morning and I cut out a panel of grocery bag for each of the kids and had them draw a map. And this actually came on the heels of Michael Harrison's, I think it was 3 or 4 post series around world building. And if you were to go back in time to August of 2008, Michael Harrison put together like this series of posts around how to build a world, and it was really around world building for role playing games and things like that. But we used the very same concepts for the kids drawing their maps. Well, where's the ocean? And why is this ocean here? And what's the ocean's name? And why is this land here? Are there mountains in your land? Are there rivers running out of the mountains down to the sea? Are there deserts? That kind of stuff. And so we just let the kids run wild, draw on their map, and then we crumpled up the maps, and rubbed them together and really made it look like old parchment. And then what I did was I used the candle and burned the edges of the map to make it look like, it had aged. We melted some of the candle wax and dripped it on their map, and they could either leave the wax on or peel the wax off, but have the wax, kind of the wax outline on their map. We burned a hole in the middle of one of the maps, all to make it look like it's really an old map. And so once we were done with all of this, then we sat down and we just told stories about each of the maps. And that simple.
Oops, we have lost Russ. You still there, Russ? Hello, Russ. Matt, are you still there?
Ken?
Hey, I'm back.
Hey.
Hold on.
So you couldn't hear me then, right?
All
right,
hold on.
Hey, this is Russ.
Hi there. Okay. We are back, guys. And Russ lost you just about around where you're talking about stories.
Okay.
And for everybody who's in the chat room too, I think it was my DSL dropped.
Okay.
So everything went
weird
down.
Thing is, I could hear you, Ken.
Oh, you could hear me for a bit?
Yeah, I could hear you. I just couldn't respond to you, and then all of a sudden the call completely dropped. So
I lost Russ, and then I was asking for everybody and didn't hear anyone. So anyway, I think we're back. The broadcast says it started back up pretty quickly, and the recording, I think, is still going. It picks up after a little bit. So
all right,
keep on rolling, man.
Let me.
Oh, wait. It's going again. Come on.
Hey, this is Russ.
Holy Toledo. Okay, hold on. All right, we're back again. I don't know what's going on. If it's the weather, whatever. I've rebooted my stuff. All right, broadcast is back up. We probably lost everybody. Yeah, we've lost everybody from the chat, from the thing. The recording is back on again, though. So
there we go. Okay,
bear with us, folks. There may have been some funny ins and outs on this podcast. I'll probably leave them in. I'm not going to worry about trimming them out. But it's been really raining a lot this week, and I'm wondering whether the water's gotten into the DSL line or something. But my DSL appears to be acting up this evening. It's back right now, so fingers crossed we'll get through to the end of the podcast.
All right.
Hopefully we'll get some people back to the chat room. Oh, it's showing six people, so people held around. Hopefully everyone in the chat room, if you're still listening, my DSL seems to be acting up. So everyone, pray for Tinkerbell. Fingers crossed we're going to make it through this podcast.
They don't have Fios set to where you are yet?
No, they don't, and I am so – yeah, it's either – we're waiting to see whether Fios or AT&T Universe – gets out here first, but you know,
I love my Fios.
Bloody, this is the Silicon Valley. This is the South Bay of San Francisco. we should have 100 megabit WiMAX, you know, public access. Come on, people.
It does seem logical, but yeah,
very troubling. But
you also live in an earthquake zone, right? So
yeah, really. So.
All the more reason for the WiMAX.
Exactly.
So
I guess that's true.
Yeah. Anyway, so Russ, finishing up, you were telling
stories. All right. So let me see where we were. So we had the kids draw their maps, and we crinkled up the papers, and we burned the edges, and we melted wax on the maps. We used tea bags to stain the maps and things like that. But then we sat down and we just had the kids tell stories about their worlds that they had developed, and you know what happened in this mountain range, or why would was there any trouble in this land or whatever. Net effect: taking a couple grocery bags, some crayons and markers, a candle, we were able to consume about 5 hours on a rainy Saturday, and it was just a great time. So, you know, the kids still have their maps, and, you know, we've got a how-to wiki article up on Wired for this. But, you know, if you got a rainy Saturday, you probably already got all these materials right at your house. Very easy to do. And there you could do it multiple times if you wanted. If you were doing a pirate-themed birthday party or something like that, you could do these things as well.
as Dan Donahue in our chat room, he mentioned he likes to do the same kind of thing for his Call of Cthulhu RPG group. So first he makes the map, and then when you read it, it envelops your soul.
Oh,
because he's that good a map maker.
It is a neat track.
Now I did that. I did do that years ago when I was a dungeon master. I had was running a campaign, and I did this very same thing. Only what I did was I made the real map, folded it into halves, and then took two panels of a crumpled up brown paper bag and drew a fake map on it and glued the two panels together around the real map. And it took the group most of a weekend to figure out that their map was fake, and that if they tore apart the two panels, they found the real map.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. That was
when I had a lot more time on my hands.
Yes, before you were married, right?
Before I was married, yeah. Before I had children.
Yep, I know how that goes. I ran a D&D campaign. Actually, this was after I was married, but before the boys were very old. Ran a D&D campaign, but it was based in Middle Earth. The idea, though, was that it was Fourth Age Middle Earth. It was, say, 5 to 10 years after the end of Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
And the idea was that King Alessar was having people resettle the North, opening up all the lands that used to be, you know, human inhabited lands all through the northern areas, not in the Hobbiton, but or not in the Shire, but all the other areas where the northern kings used to be and everything. If you remember your Lord of the Rings,
mm-hmm.
And so the whole adventure was a group of settlers and their vanguard leaving Minas Tirith and traveling, you know, through the Gap of Rohan, up the west side of the mountains, and, you know, past some places that were in the books and such, and then finally getting to a place that, you know, sort of on the map but never really fully explored. And, you know, so it was all the things that you were run into were sort of unique new adventures, but all based on, you know, monsters and everything that you'd expect to see in D&D.
Yep.
And then ultimately they never really got to the end part or too far into the end part. But the idea was I drew this really neat map of the place they were going to settle. And it was sort of like, you know, settlers going out, you would get a map of where you're supposed to go, and it would be, you know, divided up in the grid lines, and people would get their parcels and you'd settle mm-hmm. this place. And I had come up with this whole thing. It was like along one of the larger rivers, and there was actually like an ancient canal way right next to the river. So, you know, 2000 years before or whatever, they had actually built stone lined canals next to the full rivers, like they do up in the Erie Canal and all of those. And you'd actually have barge canals sort of running parallel to the main river. And you had this big open plain that they were going to settle. And it was, and I drew this whole map, and I did it in the style of the maps that Tolkien did for Lord of the Rings, and had all the little runes on it and this really nice intricate border going around it. And then there was going to be this whole adventure that there was a little monument there. It turns out to have been sort of a little, not a castle, but a what do they call it? I'm trying to think, a folly, something that looks like a folly, you know, of a castle, and they'll have little constructs around that look like they should be bigger buildings, but they're little ones. They call them follies. But then it was going to have like a secret passage, and it would go under, and they'd get involved in this whole adventure under there. But anyway, map. Did a cool map for it. So that was my geeky map story.
There really is. I think that's one of the things that really appealed to me to Michael Harrison's world building series, was just taking me back to when I took the time to do that. And it was just a blast. Even if nobody ever ventured into the worlds that I created, it was just a blast. creating a world, and I saw the same thing in my children this past September when we were doing these little maps. You know, they had all kinds of, you know, they were just coming up with stories as they were going, and you could just see them just being incredibly creative, and it was just a lot of fun. So, you know, if you've got a rainy Saturday or a rainy weekend, you know, again, you probably got all the materials you need to be able to do this.
Absolutely. That's a good one. All right, guys. Well, we're already about 50 minutes into this podcast. Let's do some quick posts of the week and get ourselves out of here.
All right.
So, Matt, have you had a chance to pick something?
Yeah, I was going to talk about Brian's post from today, actually, about is there a biological basis for toy preference? Because I've thought about this before. I have a boy and a girl. So my boy is the older one of the two. And I really liked his article because we've made a conscious effort to, you know, not get a lot of, you know, what you think of as, you know, things that only one gender or the other would necessarily like.
Not only G.I. Joes for the boy and not only Barbies for the girl.
Right. Well, actually we avoid Barbies completely. I mean,
all right. My Little Pony.
We do have some My Little Ponies, but not very many, fortunately. But the cool thing is my daughter, while she does like dolls and she does do an awful lot of art stuff and such, she also loves Star Wars and loves pretend spy stuff with her older brother and you know, things that you wouldn't think of, you know, being typical girl stuff, right. You know.
Right.
So I mean, I think that there's a certain amount of you know, girls tend to like, there does seem to be some things that are girl and boy things. I mean, my daughter was never very into trucks. We had certainly like tons of them around, but she was never, you know, she liked them okay, but she was never like as into them as my son was. And likewise,
I have to break in for a second because I'm cracking up. My sons are playing Rock Band out in the living room right now, the sound of my older son belting out Living on a Prayer is coming through the door.
Oh, God. Yeah,
I can understand why that would be pretty funny.
this, you know, mature but still falsetto voice.
Oh, we're halfway there.
Oh, man. Okay, anyway.
So that post did speak to me because
I think
because
go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, I'll go.
I was just thinking that, you know, because neither one of them exclusively likes the stuff that you would typically expect their gender to like, you know, stereotypically.
Yep.
I think realistically we see, you know, I think we're finally getting to an age where people are aware of, you know, there is, of course, nature. There is, of course, nurture. There's a balance between the two. What the parents do in terms of nurture will affect the balance, but nature is also going to push its way through. And so, you know, you got to find the balance with the kids. And the kids are going to pick up some stuff from you, but if you push too hard, they're going to hate what you give them. And you need to recognize that the kids are going to have their own likes and dislikes, and hopefully the stuff that you know, hopefully you can encourage the things that they like and help them discover and such. But it's so I think, you know, the existence of G.I. Joe and Barbie or whatever you want to use as your stereotypes or your iconography for boy toys and girl toys. I think there's some truth that there is some tendency there naturally, depending upon your chromosomes, and you know, even that's going to vary wildly. But, you know, let's all be smart about it as parents, too, and let's not assume, on one hand, and only put pink in the room, because, you know, some of that may actually alienate your child, and they may not feel comfortable with it. But let's, you know, but on the other hand, let's not be completely, you know, go completely crazy the other direction and just buy them all neutrally painted wood blobs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Russ, you got anything you want to bring up?
Yeah, I, you know, admittedly, I wasn't reading Geek Dad for a week, but one of the things that piqued my curiosity and my interest was Anton's post on February 11th about electronic Jenga. Yeah. Because, you know, I've played the real world game where you physically have to pile the blocks into the little plastic sleeve and then set them up and start pulling blocks out. And, you know, a frustrating but very engaging game. And I'm thinking, how can you turn this into an electronic game? But apparently this company has been able to do that. And, you know, if you go out and look, again, it's on February 11th that Anton posted this. You know, there's obviously a pad to move up and down and sideways to select the block that you want to pull. And then there are two pieces that, you know, you can slide left or right or in and out to simulate you pulling a block out of the Jenga puzzle. And, you know, he said that, you know, he and his kids played this game and you know, played it for a few hours. And, you know, there the bonus being you don't have to be as dexterous as you do in the real world with the video game version or the electronic game version. So I think that's kind of fun. And, you know, again, just thinking back to 22 hours in a van, I would have liked to have had this for the kids in the back seat when, you know, the movies were not running, so that, you know, it would have killed some of their time. But, yeah, it's just a neat to see how the world of motion and physical manipulation is starting to interact with video games and electronic games. And that's really why I zeroed in on this post. You know, when you think of the Wii and you think of, you know, now the Wii knockoffs and things that are coming into the world, it's all of these physical manipulations of things to interact with something that you see on a screen.
Yeah.
And so I just find that really fascinating. And apparently that, you know, they put a few hours into this game and, you know, Anton was surprised. He said it was more fun than he expected it to be. So that was, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. You just wonder how soon one of those pieces will actually, you know, break off and come out of the, out of the portal. And 'cause that's not one that's going to easily slip into a backpack or something.
Right. Exactly. And that is the downside to some of this.
Right. But interesting. Somebody worked at it and they made something that actually, you know, they actually boiled down the game and made something useful out of it. There's a game on the Wii that's sort of along the same lines, and I always, whenever I want to bring it up, I always forget the name. It's something blocks, and I'm
Boom Blocks.
Boom Blocks. Boom Blocks.
That's actually, Schnuff in the chat room just mentioned it.
Schnuff? Schnuff. Wait, I'm not getting the stuff, but.
Oh, there you go. Yep.
First of all, I know who Schnuff is, and how dare he? How dare he, sir? No, I know that's my buddy Dave from Calgary. So, and the former co-host and current host of the Star Trek podcast that I used to do. So, well, I'll call Dave out and tell everybody to go look for the Captain's Log podcast on iTunes. Which is a wonderful game. The Boom Blocks is a really cool game, and I recommend.
Yeah, I'll have to try that out.
Yeah, you've got a Wii, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, it's a good one. And interestingly enough, it was at least developed. I don't know if it's, you know, based on an idea by or they just paid him a lot of money to put their name on it, but Spielberg is involved in it somehow.
Hmm.
I think he produced it. Yeah.
So what does that mean? They paid him a lot of money to put his name on it, probably, but maybe he had some sort of He showed up at the office one day and looked at it and went, "Oh, that looks cool. Make that purple." And then they get to put his name on it. And but the cows and the sheep are cute. In that we always, you have to play the game. It's very bizarre in many ways, but it's a lot of fun. All right, last thing I'm going to bring up, since we're knocking on an hour here, I want to bring up this is sort of something funny happened this week, and what started out being was going to be just sort of a funny little quick post and remembering something in this funny little quick post actually spawned a second sort of somewhat sadder post for me. And that was, I was going to throw up on, I was going to post, not throw up.
I was going to quickly
publish a post about this cool Lego version of the starship or spaceship Yamato that we found over at, I think, Brickshelf over the weekend. The Yamato being from a series that... Over here, now I'm gonna. Of course, my mind is blanking again. It was basically Star Blazers. Thank you, Ustreamer 29825. Star Blazers, which was a much earlier Japanese anime series that made it over here, got dubbed into English, and ran on American television in the 70s.
That was a great show.
Although, you know, going back and thinking about it, do you remember though that every single episode ended, they had to shoot the wave motion gun. For some reason or another, the wave motion gun always got shot for the end of the episode.
I don't remember that, but that sounds about right.
Okay, anyway. But who will go with me on the fact that you know George Lucas had to have seen Star Blazers and the wave motion gun when he thought about the Death Star's weapon, because the whole sort of visual of the wave motion gun was so similar to what they did on the Death Star. But anyway, so I thought that was cool. And I remembered because when I watched it, now this is very San Francisco Bay Area retro history, but some of you either are from here and will remember it or will have had similar experiences in your necks of the woods. I remembered that I used to watch that on a afternoon show on one of our local channels. It wasn't a network channel at that time. It was one of our local, it wasn't an affiliate. It was a local channel, KTVU Channel 2. And they had a show, ran, I think, like at 3 or 3:30 in the afternoon, called Captain Cosmic. And it was a guy who, you know, he dressed up in this sort of space gear, and he had this helmet on, and he had a robot, and he was, you know, he was the host, and he hosted... You know, I think each day of the week had a different show, and then they cycled weekly, and he had, you know, a decoder card, and I joined and I got the decoder card.
Oh,
and it was awesome, and it was, and so I'm remembering all this, and I want to put that into the post, and so I go just to look it up on the internet, and found the website for the guy who did it. His name was Bob Wilkins. He was also the host of the local Creature Features show. They called it here Creature Features. And it was that typical, and I think almost every market had one, probably 60s, 70s, whatever, was a late night, probably Friday, Saturday night, horror movie show.
Yep.
And he was the guy who sat in the chair in the room with... you know, skulls and things all around him, and he would host, and they were all, you know, most of them were really cheesy, you knew they were cheesy. He was having fun with it. He was bringing you obscure, cheesy horror movies and some science fiction and some things like that, and you sort of realize this guy was a cool kind of geek. He was bringing you geeky movies back when being a geek was, you know, not as cool as we like to believe it is now. And I'm going to thank Dave in the chat room because he's bringing up Captain Cosmic from the Wikipedia page. Yes, there were decoder cards. I had one of those. And unfortunately, I also found out, and Wilkins had his own blog and website and stuff, and looked on it, and it turned out he passed away in January. And so, and that spawned a second post that I immediately had to write that night as a remembrance and as a memorial to Bob Wilkins, who sort of, you know, we probably all haven't thought about those things in years, but we had those shows when we were growing up. It was, you know, I would get home from school and I was a latchkey kid. So I would come home, and if I didn't have any homework, I was sitting down with a bag of Doritos and, you know, and watching whatever the cartoons were on at 3:30. And I was watching Captain Cosmic every afternoon, and I was watching Star Blazers and all that. And so that
Star Blazers, Battle of the Planets. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a significant part of my, my childhood, especially elementary school back in the '70s. And,
Voltron.
Oh, definitely Voltron. Ultraman.
Gotta have Voltron.
Ultraman.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
And I always forget the name. What was the one where it was the family of robots, and each of them had the whistle, and you blew the whistle, and they'd turn into the robot, and then the robot would also merge. And I'm not remembering what it was right now.
Oh, I don't remember that one either.
Yeah.
That one doesn't ring any. Anyway, I don't remember that. I don't think I watched that one.
Or each member of the family had a whistle, or the kid could blow the whistle and the robots would show up. I don't know. Anyway.
I don't think I watched that.
There were a lot of those. And so had to sort of, you know, put the memorial out there for Bob Wilkins, who obviously, you know, I checked his website. He was a dad. He was a total geek. Sort of, just, you know, there's an ultimate symbol for all of us. You know, that he was us 20 to 30 years before, you know, what we are now and what we're doing with Geek Dad. He was out there doing it, and he was showing the funny movies. And of course, I sort of mentioned Mystery Science Theater 3000 in the post, and he was MST3K before there was one. Not necessarily, you know, joking about it during the movie, but always making cracks during the intermissions, and it was really cool. So, you know, don't forget those guys, and hopefully we can get more of that kind of thing going out there. You know, keep going with it, and obviously we love to talk about movies and stuff on Geek Dad and on the podcast. So, just a guy to remember. And you know, if you were in the Bay Area, you had your own version of that wherever you were. Probably you guys. I mean, do you remember?
Oh yeah, I remember watching the old movies. You know, they were every Friday or Saturday night, whatever it was. One of the local stations would run, you know, the Swamp Thing or the Creature from the Black Lagoon or, you know, the Blob or one of those movies. And it was always sponsored by like a local pizza chain or something. And so all the commercials, every commercial break would have, you know, the local pizza guy doing some goofy commercial for it. But, yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember like a guy introducing them in my area at least, but I don't know. I remember watching the shows and the movies and such, certainly, but I don't remember that. So,
all right. Well, I think we have worn out our welcome now at a little bit over an hour.
Yeah, a little bit.
There was only three of us tonight, but we had.
I know.
So we're going to wrap this one up. First of all, I want to thank everybody who showed up to the chat room, especially those folks that persevered after our internet hiccups broke things up. And I'll do my shout out to Dave from Calgary in the chat room. Good to see you, buddy. And yeah, thanks. Hard to imagine me having internet hiccups. Yeah. I was holding my breath, obviously. So I'm just going to say so long to everybody. Thanks everyone for listening. My name is Ken Denmead. I am the editor of GeekDad.com. Thanks a lot to Mr. Matt Blum. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Ken. And happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much. And thanks to Mr. Russ Neumeier.
Oh, you're very welcome, sir.
I cracked on that one. Thanks to Mr. Russ Neumeier. that's it, guys. This has been episode number 38, and we will see you all or hear you all in a couple of weeks. So long, and have a good rest of your February. Bye-bye.
Take care.
See ya. We'll be right back.
Geek Dad. Geek Dad.